Welcome to Friday. Welcome to KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. We're on Twitter, at KUOW. Hop on there. We're all talking together about the news of the week. And in the studio, I'm talking with Joni Balter, host of Seattle City Club's Civic Cocktail, former Seattle Times opinion writer. Good to see you, Joni.
Good to see you.
Welcome. Mike O'Brien reps District Number 6 on the Seattle City Council, Fremont to Greenwood, Ballard to I-5. Good to see you. Thanks for coming back.
Happy New Year, Bill.
Susan Hutchison, for one more month, is running the Washington State Republican Party. Congratulations on your decision.
Thank you.
Your announcement just happened. What's next for you, Susan?
Well, I'm looking forward to the next challenge. And I'm just so pleased with the timing that the state party is in such good shape. And we have a budget surplus and we're united and focused. And our next chairman will take us through the 2018 and 2020 cycle.
Chairman or chairwoman.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll talk a little more. I'm not done asking you what you're going to do next, okay, of course. But first, let's talk about the one of the top stories, I think, this week is that, you know, smoking marijuana plants is legal in Washington State and other states and D.C. because the feds have looked the other way. But this week, the feds turned their heads. They're looking this way again. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions rescinded the Obama memo. Now, U.S. attorneys can crack down on pot. And our governor, Jay Inslee, sounds mad.
They want to go backwards on marijuana. Washington wants to go forward. And the rest of the world's going in our direction. So, no, I don't appreciate them doing this just because they're in trouble in the White House right now.
Now, Jeff Sessions is not dissolving our pot industry. He's just leaving it up to each state's U.S. attorneys. And you know who was one of those U.S. attorneys? Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan, who says the feds cannot take away our weed.
I don't think that there is the ability to do the enforcement they want, but I don't think they have the legal authority to do it either.
They don't have the legal authority? Councilmember O'Brien, do you know why the feds would not have the authority to enforce federal law?
Not my area of expertise. Okay. I'm certainly not going to second guess a former district attorney, Mayor Durkan, mm-hmm, on that one.
And the city attorney, Pete Holmes, was right there with her saying,
yeah. I view this a little bit less from the legal lens, just because I don't really have an expertise there, and more from the political lens. This is a movement that's happening across the country. I think what Jeff Sessions did was, somewhat idiotic.
Idiotic?
Yeah.
To say that we're no longer going to tell prosecutors to instruct them to not enforce the law is idiotic.
I look at the direction that we're going as a country as more and more states are legalizing this. Obviously, the legal certainty there's always been some uncertainty. But what Jeff Sessions did is just infuse much more uncertainty. In general, I appreciate the concept that local jurisdictions can make up their own mind. But what we have here is a bunch of district attorneys who work for Jeff Sessions. And the idea that one of them is going to be aggressively prosecuting recreational marijuana and another one's going to be turning the other way. I mean, that inconsistency can't last. And, you know, we have states like Colorado, Alaska that are legalizing. It's not just a Democrat versus Republican thing. There's folks on both sides of the aisle, and I suspect we'll resolve it relatively soon.
Well, in Washington State, we have a U.S. attorney for the West Side appointed by Obama. She says she'll keep doing what President Obama told her, which was to focus enforcement on selling pot to minors, mm-hmm, supporting gangs, growing on public land. But the U.S. attorney on the east side of Washington was appointed by Jeff Sessions, and he hasn't said anything yet about this. Susan, do you think that the Eastern Washington U.S. attorney will enforce federal marijuana laws in our east side?
Well, this is a legal issue. I think a lot of it has to do with financing and banking, because you can't, mm-hmm, really start business without getting some kind of financing. And
as a matter of fact, can I highlight what you just said? We talked to the co-founder of some local pot stores. Eric Gaston says this federal move could affect whether he can get bank loans. Banks are federally regulated.
So it puts a real brake on the ability of our industry to grow. It puts a brake on us as entrepreneurs to expand our businesses when we don't have access to lending.
So yes, follow the lending.
Exactly. And the banks, the federal banks all across the nation, there's just been too much ambiguity. There is law. We are a country of laws. And I think that one of the things that the Trump administration has been doing is getting back to the laws and saying we have to follow the laws we have. If you don't like the laws, let's change the law.
Are you thinking of immigration as well?
Oh, absolutely. There's so many of them that the Obama administration just flouted. And so you just can't have laws accepted according to whim. The sanctuary city laws are another issue that we're dealing with. So you know, we could spend all day talking about which laws we should have and which laws we shouldn't. Let's just have our elected officials fix the laws.
But we don't, nobody ever enforces all laws all the time. That's just not realistic, right? Every Republican, Democrat, you pick and choose how you're going to enforce
the laws. Tell that to any company that's so highly regulated that they could go to prison for disobeying finance laws. So, no, that's not the way the world works.
Joni Balter.
So, I was listening to Jay Inslee's quote there, and what he's talking about is how much society is changing since the 2012 vote here in Washington State, which was, as you all recall, 55% in favor of legalizing recreational pot. And that was true of Democratic counties and Republican counties. And you know, I wrote a piece about this for Bloomberg View, and my big conclusion was the big deal about recreational pot, legalizing it, it's no big deal. It hasn't really changed that much, except it has redirected law enforcement. They don't have to spend all their time working on something that doesn't matter that much. Many of the fears about legal pot were not realized. We do not see higher use among teenagers in the states that legalize recreational pot. We do not see drivers driving into telephone poles, which folks thought perhaps that they
would do. Any more than they normally would?
More than they normally would. And what Jay Inslee was, what I think he was describing there was, I don't know if this is well known or not, but the highly regulated industry here in Washington State is something that folks from all over the world come here to learn about how to implement. So public views have changed on this. I do not understand necessarily politically the political calculation for Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump, for that matter, because this is something they're working against, public opinion by quite a big amount. And, you know,
there was a new poll out just this week,
something
right?
Something like 71%. Only 14% of people think the laws should go the other way.
Well, then doesn't that mean it's time for Congress to actually make marijuana legal and then we don't have this issue? Jeff Sessions doesn't have to tell its prosecutors to look the other way or not?
Yeah, it's probably time. I mean, we heard U.S. Senator from Colorado, Republican, expressing his disappointment. I believe he said something to the tune that this was inconsistent with Jeff Sessions told him he would do. And he made some comments about we're going to be blocking DOJ appointments until we fix this. But, you know, and I imagine the state of Alaska, I haven't heard any comments from the Republican leadership in the state of Alaska, but my sense is that they're supportive of this. And so I do agree that, you know, we're in a transition period and there is legal uncertainty. We have states saying it's legal. We got the federal government saying it's not. We're going to look the other way. It makes banking uncertainty. But this is how we evolve as a country. And I think what we're seeing is the fears didn't materialize in Colorado and Washington in 2012. They haven't in other states. As a country, I think the political will there is now ready for a bipartisan effort to just make it legalized with the right restrictions that places like us have put in place.
Susan, you agree?
Well, I think that we need to have a dialogue and talk about things that are a little below the surface. You can throw out statistics as has been done. But, I talked to an industrial owner who hires and his
in the marijuana industry?
No, hires for industrial work.
Uh-huh.
And he said half the people who apply can't pass a drug test. So we say, what is the drug? It's marijuana. What about our shortage of pilots? That's an industry. You cannot smoke marijuana if you're going to be a pilot.
But couldn't we keep those rules with legal pot with these exceptions and, you know, and business
tests? Well, private industry has
OSHA rules.
You can't work at the Boeing company
right.
and smoke pot.
Right.
Occasionally they do random drug testing, and people are fired for having pot in their system if they're building airplanes, period. So private industry is hiring, and it's hiring big. And when we've got a population of hireable males, for example, to drive trucks and they can't pass the drug testing laws, we have to talk about it as a society. We can't just brush it aside and say, hey, but 71% of the voters think legalizing pot is fine. Well, why don't we have some discussion about it? Let's talk about what's happening in our society.
Right.
That's
and
what I think.
Businesses don't want drunk workers and alcohol is legal. I mean, are you saying
that you can't drink on the job, but once you've had your drink and you've slept it off, you are no longer drunk. And so the issue is the effect of pot on the brain, and that's a discussion we have to have.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'd like to see. Does it require regulation, or can the market figure that out? People that aren't in those industries, should they have the right to choose? And folks that want to be a driver, work at Boeing, be an airline pilot, that's a choice they have to make. And if there aren't enough people that want to stay pot-free and fly airplanes, then we'll have to figure out how to make that work.
And so we're talking about it. I think that's healthy.
I'd like to go on the record saying I don't want the airplane pilot of my next flight to be smoking pot that day or any day nearby that. But, you know, politically, I want to get at something here. You know, millennials, we always say, oh, they don't vote enough. Oh, my gosh. But if you want to wake up a few millennials, you take away their pot. You start arresting people for pot. This will not help the Republican Party. It will not.
It is a billion-dollar industry in Washington State, more than $300 million in state excise taxes. And this week, the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, rescinded the Cole memo from President Obama instructing U.S. attorneys to allow to look the other way when it comes to legal pot unless it's being done the wrong way, unless it's involving, as we said, selling to minors and supporting gang activity. So we'll all watch it together. We're discussing it on The Week in Review. That's Joni Balter and Mike O'Brien and Susan Hutchison. We're going to talk about the settlement of a sex abuse lawsuit against former Seattle Mayor Ed Murray. We're going to get back to President Trump and books about him and drilling in water off our shores and more. It's all coming up on The Week in Review. On The Week in Review, and we're on Twitter at KUOW, I'm Bill Radke. This week, Seattle taxpayers found out they're paying $150,000 to settle a sexual abuse lawsuit against former Mayor Ed Murray. The accuser is Delvon Heckard. He claims Ed Murray raped and molested him repeatedly, that he paid Heckard for sex when Heckard was 15 years old, addicted to drugs. Ed Murray has consistently denied all of that. So, City Council Member O'Brien, why is the city paying $150,000 settlement?
Frustrating, personally, to see that happen. Specifically,
were you against this settlement?
Well, let me talk through it here. To be clear, it happened over the holiday break, and I learned about it in the newspaper, so it's not like
really?
This is something that was.
You have no city council doesn't have a say in this. This is
it happened
just
on
legal
a Saturday, which made it even sort of Saturday during a holiday.
Yeah,
the part that's particularly frustrating to me, and I think should be for taxpayers, is that this. Came out of something that an accusation against Mayor Murray from long before he was a public servant here in the city of Seattle.
Yeah.
And why is the city on the hook for some allegations from long before that time? That doesn't seem fair and it doesn't seem right. That seems.
You want to explain that to listeners?
Well, I think that's something that any of us that are public servants for things that we may or may not have done prior to our life as a public servant.
But that's the crux of this lawsuit is related to Mayor Murray slandering him for his accusations while he was mayor.
And that is unfortunate for sure. Certainly when Mayor Murray made those statements, taking to task his accusers, there's parts of that were really repulsive to me. The thing that I think puts the city attorney, Pete Holmes, in a challenging position is, Mayor Murray is no longer in office. These accusations and allegations were very hard on all of us in the city, especially people that have suffered through this type of abuse in their life and bringing all this up. And there's a legal cost to the city to continue to pursue this. And there's an emotional cost on all of us in the city to drag this on for what could be multiple years long beyond.
But are the people of city really following what happens in the city legal department? I mean, is that putting people through? Is this more about the money than it is the trauma?
I think there's a component about the money, and we always have to be careful about just settling because it's cheaper, because that sends the wrong precedent. But this is a story that even with Ed Murray out of office, the newspapers would continue to run stories on it. And I do think that a lot of us are ready to move on from that. Not from the reality that people are still being abused and we still need to be making investments in our community so that this type of action, whether it's true or not, does not happen in the future, because we know this is still happening. But this specific incident, I am ready to move on beyond it.
So I think of it as a very sad coda to an already sordid story. I think the insurers for the city probably said, if you can get out of this for $150,000, get out of it, because it could have gone on a lot longer and been vastly more expensive. I must say that when I heard that the lawsuit had been refiled and included the city, I said to myself, oh, they'll settle. Because they do. The city settles quite a bit on cases like this. It doesn't really settle for all time, who did what to whom 30 years ago. It doesn't really settle that. But it does perhaps give Delvon Heckard, you know, some closure to what he was pitching. The mayor is still denying this, so we don't really know. We don't end up knowing, other than this has a period at the end of the sentence, that this is finished for this moment. That doesn't also preclude the other folks in this from suing.
Yeah, four other men.
The template is there to sue the city, to sue Ed Murray.
Okay, so again, City of Seattle has settled a sexual abuse lawsuit against the former mayor, Ed Murray. The settlement costing Seattle $150,000, which our guests, it sounds like, are saying is a wise investment. A sad but wise investment, all things considered. And we'll see what happens with those other accusers. Okay, we're going to continue with the Week in Review. Drilling for oil off Washington's coast, oil that would be used to make gasoline, which some Oregonians can now pump themselves instead of having someone else do it, and more coming up on the Week in Review. Susan Hutchison is the head of the state Republican Party, not for much longer, as she had just decided. Mike O'Brien, Seattle City Council member, Northwest Seattle. Joni Balter, host of Civic Cocktail, former Seattle Times opinion writer. And I'm Bill Radke. This week, America got a new bestseller. The author, Michael Wolff, asked Trump allies and insiders what the president is really like.
I will tell you the one description that everyone gave, everyone has in common. They all say he is like a child. And what they mean by that is he has a need for immediate gratification. It's all about him.
A childlike president. Well, the juiciest parts were in this book are Steve Bannon calling a meeting between Trump campaign officials and a Russian lawyer treasonous, calling Trump's daughter Ivanka dumb as a brick, saying the Mueller investigation will focus on money laundering and they're going to crack Donald Trump Jr. like an egg on national TV. So lots of gossip. Except we're also told not to believe the author. The New Republic quoted an editor who said Michael Wolff makes readers think he spent hours and days with his subject, when in fact he may have spent no time at all. So I would have been happy to not discuss this book, Susan Hutchison, except President Trump, childlike, reacts by insulting Steve Bannon, threatening possible libel charges against him and the author of the book and the publisher of the book. So the publisher rushes the book out early and it's a bestseller. Is all this going to work out well for President Trump anyway, like most things do,
you know,
at least so far?
I think that this is just another indication that we don't have a professional politician in the White House. And it started from the very beginning. He didn't have a crew of professional White House organizers and bureaucrats, so to speak, running the show. He kind of brought this campaign team in. We all knew it wasn't working. I mean, that was from the start. I don't think this is new news. And so there's been a lot of shakeup. As you know, a lot of people have left. I think, you know, as I said to you a few weeks ago when I was here, I don't know Steve Bannon, never met him. I've observed him. I've watched
President
him.
Trump acts like he never met him either.
I think Steve Bannon leaving the White House was a good thing. And it appears that he's the leaker. It appears that he wrote most of this book. And so his ego.
He ghost wrote it for Michael Wolff?
Yeah, his ego and everything else related. I was really disappointed that he riled up the Alabamians to oust Luther Strange. And I was I thought it was a good thing that his candidate lost. And
Roy Moore.
It pretty much sidelined Steve Bannon. So I think this whole thing has really revealed more about Steve Bannon than it has about the Trump family.
Fellow journalist Joni Balter, yes.
Can I just correct you, Bill? The juiciest part of the book were the Big Macs that the president supposedly eats at 6:30.
Yes. Choose your Choose your juicy anecdote from the anecdote
book. At 6:30, a couple of Big Macs. That was juicy. You know, the big takeaway for me in this book was simply that the people closest to the president told Michael Wolff, none of them have said they were misquoted. He supposedly has tapes, that they don't think the president of the United States is ready to be president, that he's mentally unfit to do this work. I think that's the big takeaway.
Yeah, so here, Susan, that claim is that it's worse than he's adorably childlike. And, you know, of course he does. He's a novice who's learning, you know, he's a quick study. But plenty of people are saying he's a terrible president.
Oh, that I disagree.
Yeah.
You know, you can disagree with his form, but I don't think you can disagree with his substance. He has absolutely done what he said he was going to do. He appointed an outstanding Supreme Court justice, which is the reason why a lot of us voted for him from the start, because we knew that was of absolute importance. And then
any Republican would have appointed a conservative Supreme Court.
That's right. And we had to elect a Republican in order to do that.
Right. That's not the same as saying he's great compared to any other Republican.
Well, take a look at the economy. I think that that's the biggest story of the year.
The economy's doing pretty well.
It may be the biggest story of the new century, and it's hardly being covered. So I think the jobs reports, the millions of people that have gone off of food stamps since President Trump has been president.
148,000 new jobs came out today.
Amazing forward movement in the economy that is going to affect everyone and make everyone's life better. It's a really exciting time. And everywhere you turn, you hear, except, you know, inside the Democratic Party, you hear how optimistic people are about the future. That is the work of President Trump.
Mike O'Brien, city council member.
Yeah. I think it's not appropriate to give Donald Trump credit for the economy, especially a year in. And I think there's always this ongoing question of how responsible is the president.
Yes. Any president, Republican, Liberal, it's always silly to credit or blame the one person, right, the president, for the economy.
You know, you look at the actions he's taking. What has he done? You know, he's done his tax bill to make sure that the wealthiest will get tax breaks, including himself. That may help the stocks on Wall Street. But you look at what's happening in the ground, we have growing income inequality. We have a city like Seattle that is extremely prosperous and has been for a number of years, booming economy locally, and a significant increase in the number of homeless people on an
ongoing
basis.
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up, Mike, because, you know, why the city council majors in the minors in this city when you've got this homeless problem that you do is astounding to me. And the problems in your city are yours to be blamed. You know, the Democrats have run this city. In fact, the left wing of the Democratic Party has run this city. And so let's take a look at everything. Let's look at education. Let's look at income inequality. Let's look at homelessness.
Well, who is
can
right?
I go back
transportation?
To the
let's look at taxes.
Let's look at the opiate epidemic in the city that city council members around the country are dealing with. You're going to blame that on a city council member?
Well, all you have to do is look at cities around the country. And besides Oregon, and California, Washington State's got the biggest issue with the homelessness of any state in the country. So aren't we second or third in the entire nation? You've got to try to explain that away. Nobody comes here to live outdoors with the kind of climate we have.
Can I go back to the president for one second?
Okay.
And just between us, Susan, do you ever wake up and read some of those tweets and feel embarrassed by this president for some of the ways he talks?
Like I said, he is not a politician. And, you know, I look at the tweet that he responded to Kim Il-jung the other day. And
my button's bigger
Kim
than Jung your
Il,
button.
Excuse
that
me.
Is
Kim Jong-un.
And all I can say is he talks his language. That was a
he talks Kim
total,
Jong's language?
Absolutely. So
pretty,
you know,
low bar.
Suddenly
that,
we are
helping.
Making progress in North Korea. But as long as everybody wrings their hands over a funny tweet and takes it so seriously and predicts Armageddon, they're not paying attention to what's really going on, which is our excellent military
it's
is
not.
Getting
the
into
threats
place.
Threats about nuclear war are not
the,
funny.
Here's funny about
the
taunting
Olympics.
Someone who actually does have his finger on a nuclear button.
Okay, here's one thing that is really going on. This week, the Trump administration said it wants to reopen the ocean off Washington and Oregon to oil and gas drilling, first time in more than 30 years. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke says this is part of the Trump plan for energy dominance.
We're going to have the strongest energy policy and become the strongest energy superpower. We certainly have the assets to do that.
Not just Washington, Oregon, of course. This is a nationwide policy. Governor Inslee says Washington, Oregon, and California will work together to protect the water off our shores.
It's a battle we've won for decades, and one way or another, we will continue to win. And it's unfortunate that this is yet another manifestation of the administration wanting to go backwards.
Of course, as Inslee knows, this isn't Washington water. This is federal water, Joni. We're just close to it. You think this drilling will really happen?
You know, I think that this policy, which we've been debating for many years in this country, mm-hmm. is certainly going to be debated again. I think that the governors, like Inslee, of all the states that are on the coast, realize they're one deep water horizon accident away from, you know, really hurting their economies. You look at the Maryland governor, a Republican, isn't in favor of this. The Republican governor of Florida isn't in favor of this.
Who got his water fouled by that BP oil spill.
This isn't some sort of hippie nature thing. We're talking about real industry in Florida, tourism. It's huge. If you have an accident, your industry is quite hampered.
Susan, even Republican Congressmember Dave Reichert told the Seattle Times, quote, this moves America in the wrong direction. What do you think?
Well, I agree with Joni. I think there's going to be a lot of discussion. And as according to what I've read and what I've seen, the Interior Department is very much open to feedback. And I think it's the next 60 days. There's going to be a lot of feedback from all of the states for whom it will affect them. But energy,
and it's going to be, I want to tell listeners because they might want to know, it's going to be a public comment period.
Yes.
So there will
yes.
be crowded, emotional debate about this coming
yeah.
up.
I think that's really, really important. And so different states have different points of view. Alaska is in favor, for the most part, of offshore drilling off their shores. And of course, it's not in their state waters. It's in the ocean well beyond their state borders.
Right. Federal jurisdiction.
This is completely reckless, and I think it will be stopped, but it's another signal that this administration is making decisions based on the bottom line of these major corporations, in this case, gas and oil companies, at the expense of coastal communities in red and blue states that really don't want to see this happen. And you look at the math, if you want to be an energy superpower, do you really go back to the last century, or do you look at where the energy is going to come from in the future? We know that the cost of renewables is continuing to come down, and that's what's creating the jobs. You know, the number of jobs that are getting created in places like Texas and Iowa around wind and solar, that's a booming part of the economy. That's where this country should be investing. And we're losing ground to countries in Asia and Europe because we're not making those investments. We're distracted by the rhetoric about going back decades.
Well, the key rhetoric is energy dominance. First, energy independence, and then energy dominance. And you know, when the United
States. Why do we want energy dominance?
Because it means peace on Earth.
Tell me more.
We actually don't even need the drilling. We don't need the oil right now.
Well, see, this is what's going to happen when people talk and they discuss it and they give public comment. We're going to be able, and Mike, I appreciate your thinking on this, but I think it's really important for us to get into the 21st century when it comes to technology and realize that even drilling, the technology involved in drilling or exploration is what the term is being used, is very different than it was in the 20th century. But
Deepwater Horizon was 6 years ago.
I mean, 2010.
And it was very old apparatus, as you recall.
We put regulations in place to prevent that from happening.
Yes.
Trump rolled those back.
Actually, we have got a whole horizon, let me use that word, in front of us with liquid natural gas, fracking, and wind and everything else there is. And I think any good economy has a lot of diversity.
So you're saying the private sector will decide fracking is a lot cheaper than cranking up an offshore drilling project, so maybe not do it.
Well, I think the market determines that
right.
a great deal. But when I said peace on Earth, I mean that seriously. The big picture here is that if the United States, which is known as the superpower that keeps peace.
Used to be.
On Earth.
We've ceded that in the last couple of years.
The peaceful, stable
totally. Absolutely. America that respects rule of law.
Rule of law.
When we have energy dominance, then these small bit players like Venezuela, who have so much oil, or the Middle Eastern countries like Saudi Arabia, who have so much oil, don't get to pull anybody's strings. That's what this goal is, and it's a very noble goal for this country.
Will climate change
play? I don't see any nobility in this kind of drilling. I mean, you know, this aside from the two Republican governors I mentioned, this does seem to be more of that Trump beat up the blue states. You know, this president has a challenge in front of him, and that is to be the president of the whole country. And he keeps going after blue states, and it's just not helping his presidency, and it's not making him a very good president.
Well, we just said that Florida and Texas and Louisiana, Mississippi and Alabama, they're all coastal.
Right,
they're all
the most coastal are Democratic.
South Carolina is opposed.
And they'll be
New Jersey's
able to
opposed.
Give their public feedback. And so
they have already.
What role is climate change going to play any role in this? Are coastal states going to say, what about climate change? And the president will say, who cares about Chinese hoaxes? Is climate change even going to be a factor in the decision?
I'm sure that there'll be lots of discussion about all aspects of energy exploration.
This administration has clearly turned its back on climate change. You know, we're the only country in the world, talk about global dominance, who is not part of the Paris Climate Accord and is recognizing that this is a real threat. You know, even our military apparatus recognizes climate as a threat, and our president's ignoring that. But absolutely, in the public conversation about drilling offshore, climate will be central to that, in addition to the potential devastation to a Deepwater Horizon disaster. And this administration's not going to be here forever. And so we will take the long game on this. I believe, as Governor Inslee said, we will fight this and we will win. But it's a distraction. It means that our country has fallen behind on the investments we should be making in a clean energy future that would drive a new economy, that would address the climate change issues we face. And that's what's just disappointing in this administration. And frankly, it's what's to be expected from them, but it's still disappointing.
So one way to measure a president's success, perhaps, if we're going to do that, is through the stock market. But the other is an environmental record, which lasts and lasts and endures. And this president, you know, shrinking national monuments, gutting regulations, he's running for the worst environmental president ever, I guess.
Joni, is Joni Balter sitting across from a future Trump administration staffer? Susan Hutchison, you're leaving how many times have you been asked this question? You're leaving the state Republican Party, heading up that party, and you're going to the Trump administration, right?
I didn't announce that. No, I did not announce
it. But you're announcing it right now, live on KOW's Week in Review, right?
Bill, I am looking forward to the next challenge. As I've said, ever since I ran for office, I solve problems and fix things. And the Republican Party, excuse me, I've got a cough.
Cough, it's okay.
The Republican Party really needed fixing at the end of 2012. And I've been really honored to be able to be a voice for Republican voters in this state. There are lots of them. If you live in Seattle, you don't realize it. But if you look at the legislature, you see it. And
speaking of the legislature.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, those guys.
That's about to kick in, there are now Democratic majorities in the House, the Senate, and there's the governor. What do you think is going to change?
Well, if they're smart, they'll be measured and careful and not offend most of the people in the state by implementing new taxes that we don't need. If they're careless, which is possible, we could very well end up with some great talking points to win elections in 2018.
Anybody think big changes with the Democratic Washington State House and Senate and governor?
I think elections have consequences. That one vote in the 45th district probably will bring about some change, probably, you know, possibly a carbon tax. And then they can debate whether they want that, you know, the proceeds from that to go to McCleary, the education debt that our state has, or if they want it to go to energy kind of renewal type programs. I think that may be what's on the horizon here for us.
I agree with Joni. You know, this isn't, and I think we can't kid ourselves that this is going to be a radical change, but, you know, having Doug Erickson, a Trump supporter Republican, chairing the Energy Committee, who doesn't believe in climate change, no longer the chair in the Senate of that because of the one seat change in the Senate. You know, that will mean that we can actually have debates about climate change and discussions that Susan talked about in both the Senate and the House. Does that mean we get to a climate bill in the state? It would be great if that could happen this session. It's a short session. I don't know that we'll get there. But at least we're starting to have those conversations. And if it doesn't happen this year, maybe next year, we can have some good energy and climate policy in Washington.
Okay, so that's a little week in preview because that's coming up. The state legislature about to get into session here. In review, the Trump administration wanting to reopen the ocean off Washington and Oregon to oil and gas exploration. And there will be, as we've said, crowded, emotional public hearings across the country. In Olympia, there will be lawsuits. So we'll see what happens. Coming up, all that oil turning into pumpable gas in Oregon, our friend next door. And speaking of the cars, the idea of reducing parking in Seattle as transit comes aboard and as ride share comes aboard, we get closer to the idea of limiting parking. I'm sure that will be without controversy. That's coming up on the Week in Review. It's the Week in Review, and we're on Twitter, at KOAW. We're talking about the news gone by, what it all means for now and the future, with Susan Hutchison, just about to step away from the state Republican Party helm. We have District 6 Seattle City Council member Mike O'Brien. We have the host of Seattle City Club's Civic Cocktail. That's Joni Balter. And in the news this week, America made fun of Oregon because you can't pump your own gas there. You all know Oregon is full service only, has been for 65 years. Still, I always forget that until I try to fill my tank in Oregon. But this week, a new law took effect that lets gas stations in the rural counties of Oregon have self-service because they don't get much traffic. So rather than stay open all night with a full-time gas pumper, they would just close. So if you're out of gas at night in rural Oregon, too bad for you. Well, a Medford, Oregon TV station put this on Facebook, and they got a few posts like this one from Mike Perrone, who wrote, "I've lived in this state all my life, and I refuse to pump my own gas. I had to do it once in California while visiting my brother and almost died doing it. This is a service only qualified people should perform. I will literally park at the pump and wait until someone pumps my gas." That post got picked up everywhere. San Francisco Chronicle says Oregonians lose it when they realize they might have to start pumping their own gas. USA Today says internet mercilessly laughs at Oregonians after self-serve gas law. Wait a minute, said Oregonian columnist Cale Williams. Yes, Oregonian columnist named Cale. Cale Williams, I interviewed him this week. Cale went and found that Facebook poster with who almost died pumping his own gas, Mike Perrone.
Mike does not have a brother, and Mike has never set foot in Oregon. He wrote the post sarcastically, but I think that just goes to show, like, in all of these dozens of stories that were written yesterday and the day before, they all cited the same four or five Facebook comments that made Oregonians look ridiculous. Yeah. And that was what kind of rubbed me the wrong way, especially when, you know, some of them, as we found out from Mike, weren't even real.
Anybody here want to make fun of Oregon? Or do you secretly admire Oregon?
No, I secretly feel that Oregon is entering the 21st century and we should welcome them with, you know, come on, Oregon, get with it. It's not that hard to do. and some of the jokes are funny. But you didn't answer the burning question. Hmm. Is that person still waiting for the gas to be pumped?
Literally, according to the Facebook post.
Sitting there. Sitting there. Send in rescue. Come on.
Yeah.
I have a lot of respect for Oregon, but this one, it seems like it's time to change. I'm old enough to remember when I was first driving, you had a choice between self-service or full service, and it went away because the market decided there wasn't demand for it, and that's probably what makes sense.
Yeah, but if Washington State were to pass a law, just like Oregon's, old Oregon law, saying gas stations all have to be full service, would you be saddened by that, or would you be kind of happy?
You know, here's how the market will weigh in. And this is what's so much fun. There will be gas stations that say, "We still pump your gas." And they will get business from people who are willing to pay a little extra to have that service. So when the market is at play, instead of government saying what has to be done, then, you know, the owner of the gas station gets to weigh whether the cost of the pumper, hiring a pumper, is worth it. And maybe some places in Oregon it will be.
But has there ever been a law where you said, yeah,
yay,
you
know, law.
Yay law. Like, for example, so you come to Oregon, you're used to pumping your own gas, and then so you drive up, you get out of your car, the attendant says, "Oh, no, no, I'll handle that for you." And you say, "Oh, yeah, it's Oregon. I don't have a choice. I'm going to sit in my car. I'm going to be warm. I'm going to
go back on my phone," which I was already on. You know?
Go back on my phone.
Hopefully not.
And it's out of my hands. It's a little vacation.
I agree. It's kind of been fun looking at this story this week and being reminiscent of those long ago days where life was so civilized, wasn't it?
I remember, it's dim, but it's my childhood. People with stars on their caps would come out and... What company was that?
Texaco,
yes.
Well,
and they'd
done.
Come out
well,
and they'd have a rag and they would I would watch them clean the windshield and you know and check the oil, pull the dipstick out.
You're like a NASCAR driver.
Yeah, right.
Check your tires for air.
Check your tires, rotate them, vacuum your upholstery, you know, get you back out on that racetrack.
We all had cleaner windshields in those days.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Yeah,
that's
used to be bug-free back in my day.
We're all going to have electric vehicles in a few years, so it's kind of moot, I think, Bill.
You know, funny you brought that up. We're all going to have self-driving vehicles. We just had this discussion in the city council. By the way, I'm talking to Joni Balter, Susan Hutchison, and Seattle City Council member Mike O'Brien. Mike, this week your colleague, Rob Johnson, head of land use planning zoning, said we should reduce parking in Seattle. Don't force apartment builders to provide as much parking. Limit parking spots in areas where there's good mass transit. Some people hear that and they just think, war on cars. Do you endorse less parking in Seattle where it's you've circled for a parking spot, but do you think this is a good idea?
Absolutely. We largely do this already in Seattle, and part of this legislation is trying to provide some clarity where there's been a lack of clarity in the law. You know, this gets back to a climate question that's really important, and KOW is running some stories next week, I think, on this. Seattle and the people of Seattle and the people they elect have made a lot of commitments about our commitment to address climate change. Seattle wants to be a leader. We've made some really bold set some really bold goals for ourselves. And when you look at the data, we are not on the trajectory to meet those goals. And we have to look at ourselves, myself included, and figure out, are we ready to do the things it takes to be that climate leader? And one of the questions is around parking.
But is it worth, let me stop you on climate change. Is it worth the cost for one city to try to affect a big environment? Make the case.
Absolutely. If Seattle were the only city and we could flip a switch and be carbon neutral tomorrow, you're right. It wouldn't make a difference in the global situation. But what we can do is we can demonstrate how to be a carbon-free city and have a booming economy, have a great quality of life, have great income equality and equity in our city. And that is, if it's a replicable model, then we start to make differences. And that's what we do in Seattle.
We're never going to be a carbon-free city because we exhale carbon dioxide and cities growing and growing. So, you know, there are limits.
Yeah,
to,
the whole exhale argument's a little silly. We have trees, too, that absorb carbon. We're talking about fossil fuels being burnt and put in the atmosphere. That's what's causing climate change. It's not people exhaling.
On a different level, it always makes me nervous when the Seattle City Council is working on parking regulations. And I will remind you of that time when they had to balance the budget during the economic downturn by raising parking and adding more hours to the time that they collected parking fees. The city had needed like $23 million or $25 million. Why I remember this number, I have no idea. But they needed this extra money. Did they ever give it back when the city was flush? It's very, very flush right now, as we all know. The other idea is...
Mike O'Brien is inhaling, and if he exhales, there's going to be carbon dioxide involved.
No exhale.
So Councilmember Burgess and I at the time worked on that. Yes, the legislation came over to raise money, and we said, you know what? We do not want a parking policy that is about raising money. We want a parking policy at the city that is about managing our limited on-street parking. And what we did was we looked at neighborhoods where the parking on-street parking at the meters was always full. And what that indicates to me is that the price is too low. And we looked at other neighborhoods.
That's the free market.
And we looked at other neighborhoods where we had meters and the parking was always available. And we said the price in those neighborhoods is too high. And so we have had a policy for the last 7 or 8 years now where every year we look at the demand in neighborhoods and adjust price accordingly. Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. The revenue is a side effect for that. But we have to manage the resources. And it gets to the issue around, you know, what are we going to require builders to build? The challenge around requiring someone to build parking in a building that's not going to be profitable. That means we're saying when you build a building, you have to subsidize that parking. Because right now in most places in Seattle, we already don't require builders to build parking. Most of them do build it because There's enough demand for it that they can recover their cost.
Because they're because they want it and they're going to use it. That's why they.
But in some places they don't. And why should we as a city say you have to build parking even if people don't want it? If they're not willing to pay for it. Because what that means is we are subsidizing parking. And if we really want to be that city that addresses our climate needs, okay. We can no longer be subsidizing parking.
One less government rule, Susan Hutchison, you like that? Don't require parking to be built.
I see everything as, because I'm a Republican, I see the market forces at work. And across the lake is a beautiful city that's thriving. And people.
Spokane?
No, across the lake.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and I think Spokane is a beautiful city that's thriving too. But across the lake is Bellevue, and there are an awful lot of people moving to Bellevue because they're so fed up with the government of Seattle. That's what I think you guys should be more concerned about.
But we're talking about parking here.
Majoring in the minors. let's figure out how to take care of our homeless problem and our infrastructure, our education okay. of our kids, the big stuff.
But regarding parking, I still, yes, Joanne.
Can I just fire off one more lament / complaint, and that would be about streetcars? I mean, the city council, which, you know, is anti-car, you must admit.
Is the city council anti-car?
No, absolutely not.
Okay,
he didn't
anti-car.
Admit it.
I own a car.
I gave him
and
a
they're
chance.
Anti-car because the car is the symbol of freedom in America. It has always been the case.
Mike O'Brien, are you anti-car because a car is a symbol of freedom? True or false, sir?
Car is not a symbol
sir,
of freedom. Mobility.
The question.
Mobility is a
Can
symbol of freedom.
Can I go back
freedom.
To my lament?
Tell every 16-year-old.
Jody didn't
that's to do with
16-year-olds are getting
cars.
Driver's license at a lower rate these days.
Hang on, answer this. Streetcar. Why do we need so many empty streetcars taking up big swaths of the streets? And in fact, now the city's going to be sued because it turns out, and I knew this personally, my mom was in a streetcar trolley track accident years ago. I knew these were going to lead to this.
You're talking about bicycles getting stuck in
there? Bicycles are getting clenched in there. It's going to be lawsuit city around here.
By the way, I did speak to a transportation expert this week who said, you know, in Europe, they ride with big mountain bike tires instead of the little road tires that get stuck in streetcars. That's what he said.
Joni, I love that you're bringing up this subject because I think we could extend it and talk about sound transit as well and what that is meaning to the people of this region and the costs of hundreds for some and thousands for others every year of financing a transportation system that's going to be out of date when it's finished.
Sound Transit is going to be a great investment. And when we're able to connect all of our communities, Bellevue, Redmond, Tacoma, Everett, Ballard, West Seattle, on a rapid, reliable light rail system. So when a truck turns over an I-5, you're not an hour late for work. It's going to be a great thing for everybody. And that's, you know, the voters voted on that. They wanted to see it. And that's what we're going to build.
They didn't expect it to have these cost overruns and exorbitant taxes. None of them realized in the fine print that they were going to be spending so much on car tabs to cover the cost of it.
And yeah, the cost to the Linwood line, that's going to cost more than expected, right? And the cost over Lake Washington to put a rail on a floating rail, isn't going to cost more than expected?
The Sound Transit taxes are only going to be matched by the property tax increases that are taking effect to fund McCleary, the education funding.
I mean, when Sound Transit went out to the voters for the Linwood extension, which was 8-9 years ago now, construction costs have gone up significantly in our city right now. And so it's a reality they're facing, and they're having to find ways to trim that budget and make it work.
The Week in Review, I'm Bill Radke. We've been talking with Susan Hutchison, Mike O'Brien, and Joni Balter. And finally, it's chilly. It's rainy. We are arguing with North Korea about button size. Okay, we deserve some happiness. Well, here it is. Does that sound a little off?
A little modern Nirvana, huh?
What do you notice about that? It's Nirvana, but it doesn't sound right, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's listen to a little bit more. Load up on guns, bring your friends, it's fine to lose, to pretend she's overboard, self-assured, now, the dirty word, hello, 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 hello. an Austin, Texas beach band that makes summertime dream pop and doesn't care about Seattle angst has remixed and auto-tuned Nirvana from a minor to a major key, and so Smells Like Teen Spirit is now Smells Like Teen Sprite. What do you think? Happy, right?
Clever.
Yeah.
I don't know. The beauty or the curse of technology? Auto-tune. I'm not sure where that should fit in our world.
It'll fix the doldrums of January.
Right.
Are upon us.
From a minor to a major key. That describes the difference between Seattle and Dallas.
A minor to a major key. That's the difference between Seattle and Dallas?
Yeah.
I think it's Austin, not Dallas.
Austin.
I'll hold hands with Austin all the time.
All right. We're holding hands as we listen to Happy Nirvana. And there you go, happy or not. You've been listening to The Weekend Review on KOW 94.9 Seattle. Thanks for joining us on Twitter at KOW. Thank you, Joni Balter, Mike O'Brien, Susan Hutchison. Thanks.
Thank you, Bill Bradke.
A happy, upbeat, angst-free 2018 to you all. I'm Bill Radke. We'll do it again next week.